Well, my name's Matt. If we haven't met, I have the privilege of being the minister here at Maybridge. As Hannah just mentioned, I'm actually on sabbatical right now, so I don't actually have to be here. I wanted to be here because two good friends... Oh, thanks. Two good friends are getting baptised, and that's wonderful. I wanted to be here. You, though, if you're a guest, if you're visiting, you may be wondering what you're doing here. Maybe somebody forced you to come, or you know, pushed you hard to come. Why, in this day and age, are perfectly sensible grown-ups like John and Jenny getting up in front of loads of people, inviting their friends and family, and then having what looks like a really brief and disappointing hot tub experience to announce to the world that they're sort of building their lives around a 2,000-year-old religious teacher? Why would anybody do that, you may ask? And if you're sat here sort of asking that question, let me just reassure you, you're not on your own. The rest of us get it. We realise that that might seem a little bit of an unusual thing to do. Those of us who would call ourselves Christians in many ways have little in common. We're from all walks of life, different ages, different lifestyles, backgrounds. The one thing we have in common is that we all believe that in this ancient Jewish man, Jesus, we've somehow encountered God. And there's something about that that compels us to make him more important than everything else in our lives. And so I'm not going to talk for very long, but I want to look for a moment at one verse of the Bible. There's loads of verses in the Bible, but one verse in the Bible that says something of why. And as we do this, I'm very aware you might not buy into all this. You might think Christians are weird. Certainly some of them are. You might have had bad experiences of church. Some of us have. You might not think there's a God at all. Or you might just think, well, maybe there's something in this. Maybe it's tenuous speculation. There's more questions than we can engage with today, obviously. But I'm also willing to bet the more you hear about Jesus, the more you hear, there's going to be at least a part of you that says, I want this to be true. I don't know if it is, but I do want it to be. Anyway, that's up to you. We'll see. So the bit of the Bible we're going to look at, it's in John's Gospel, an account of Jesus' life. And it's this one sentence. Fiona, I don't have a clicker. Would you be able to sort that for me? Thank you. And it's one sentence, and it says, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. This summarizes the whole Christian thing pretty well. Let me give you just three quick reasons why. Firstly, it's on God's initiative. It's on his initiative. The first thing is that there's something about God that means he takes the initiative with us. It's a little bit like, I'm sure you've observed this sometime in life, when a young couple get together and there's a bit of manoeuvring and they try and work out if the other person likes them or not and they don't know. And eventually somebody's got to make the first move, haven't they, and say something. And one of them has to say to the other, you know, hey, I want to pursue a relationship here, you know, or words to that effect. Probably sound cooler, you know, you build it up, wouldn't you? You know, I want to pursue a relationship. That's how I got together with my wife, not. But any time, it's a courageous move because you could be left hanging, couldn't you? The other person might say, well, actually, you know, I'm not interested. I see you as a friend, that sort of thing. With God, he makes the first move. He always comes after us. And he probably won't send you a text or pass you a note across the classroom, but he'll make himself known. And the big idea in the Bible is that he did this most fully, most meaningfully in Jesus. That is God saying to everybody, I want things to be good between us. I'm making the first move. He sent his Son, no less, to do that. But the second thing is, this was not to condemn. It says in that verse, he sent his Son into the world not to condemn the world. I don't know what you've heard about God, what experiences you've had, what impression you've had about the God that Christians believe in. I've found that many people think that God is quite into condemnation, if you really push them. Like God is some sort of intergalactic Victorian granddad figure who's waiting to find fault and tell you off. And you can see why nobody would want to engage with a God who was like that. And I want to say to you, that is not the God we're talking about. That's not the God we're talking about. He's not like that. And the thing is, he could have been, legitimately. He's God. He knows everything about you. He knows all your ideas, your thoughts, your issues, your hang-ups, all your bad bits better than you know them. And yet, he doesn't want to condemn you. It's not what he's after. Think about that. Someone who knows all of it in your life, every single bit, and yet his desire is not to condemn you. Maybe this God is not like the impression you've been given or what you've heard somewhere else. I don't know. But the third thing that we see in this one verse is that all of this was in order that the world might be saved through him. So rather than condemning, his desire was to save. Somehow, through Jesus, God's desire is to save people. And that, of course, brings a certain assumption, that the assumption that somehow we need saving. And that tends to be, I find, something that turns people off to God a little bit. What? I don't need saving. I'm a good person. I'm strong and I'm capable and I do my best. I've never met anybody who, when you talk to them and you get into this idea of needing saving, they've gone, oh, do you know what? That sounds great. I'm flawed, definitely. I'm in need of saving. This is brilliant. Thanks for telling me that. But this offer of being saved is for the whole world. It's God saying, it doesn't matter who you are, old, young, left wing, right wing, Arsenal, Tottenham, whatever, you need saving. It's the ultimate leveler of humanity. And there's none, you won't find this in the Bible, there's none of this sort of, well, you know, some people are sort of bad and some people are sort of good. You know, Hitler was bad, Gandhi, he seemed to be sort of good. Hopefully, maybe I'm sort of good in that sort of direction. No, there's just God telling us, you all need saving, everyone, that's the hard news. But the wonderful news is, he's saying, I'm extending the offer of saving to all of you. To everybody, it's available. Whatever you've been up to, whatever you've done, whatever you think. And in this person, Jesus, this is God saying, here's how you know. Because I've shown up like this. I want to save you. I want to save you. How does he do it? This son who came into the world is crucified. He takes on our wrongness. Mysteriously. It's hard to understand. All the stuff that deserves condemnation, he's the ultimate substitute in for us. And then he rises again, incredibly. Not just to prove that he's really God, because you would need to do that, wouldn't you? But to demonstrate that the finality of death, the one thing humanity absolutely cannot save itself from, is overcome. That's saving done properly, isn't it? If you can beat death, that's the ultimate. And so here's why we're doing this. Jenny and John, I know them both pretty well. They're normal people. They're very nice, by any human standards, both of them. But they're normal people. But they've seen God take the initiative with them without condemnation. He saved them. And they know it. And they want to publicly say, this is what's happened to me. That's all a Christian is. Not anyone special, not anyone better. And this church exists, every church exists, because thousands, millions of people around the world through history, in every culture, can say exactly the same thing. Not that I'm special, but God has saved me, and it's wonderful. And so that, just to give me just 1 second, I'm just going to ask you this question. What about you? God, I think, has taken initiative with you. If you're here this morning, you've heard something about him. And there probably are other things too. If he's taken the initiative with you, how might you respond? The ball is in your court, so to speak. What are you going to do? Back to Phil.
Thanks very much, Matt. And now I'm going to ask John in a moment, but first Jenny, to tell us the real reason why they're getting baptized this morning.
So I wanted to tell you about when I was 15, I had the opportunity to go on a voluntary service, long summer. I was away from school for about 6 to 8 weeks. I went to the Middle East with a charity that supports disabled and disadvantaged teenagers to go and do community service. And we had the privilege of walking the Stations of the Cross. And I remember thinking then, wow, if that happened, what a thing. I mean, really, wow. I was blown away by the sights and the sounds and the smells and the heat. And I just remember thinking, wow. And then really between then and about just over a year ago, my faith, and it's not what I would understand it to be now, but my faith as I understood it then, was this incredibly quiet, incredibly private, incredibly personal thing. And to be honest, I can't quite believe that I'm up here talking to you about it today. And it's really a testament to God's timing that I'm up here and the incredible people that he's put in my path over the last little while, lots of whom are here today, lots of whom go to Maybridge, form part of our church family. And I'm so grateful for you all in sharing this day with me today and sharing it with John as well. It's a real privilege. And to be honest, when I joined Maybridge, my feelings about faith at that time were probably why I was so comfortable at Breakfast Church. So shout out to everybody who's here from Breakfast Church. I really appreciate you coming along as well. So about just over a year ago, it was the first time really that I felt God trying to tell me something. And it was like over the course of 4 or 5 days, a sort of persistent poking on the shoulder. Gentle, but there every day, telling me, no, enough now, stop it, start listening, turn away from that, you can't have that and me, and it's time you had me. And really, my journey in faith since that time has really been about just what God has been doing in my heart, and I wanted to share it with you all. I was somebody who was incredibly prone to low mood and anxiety and a lack of self-confidence, and I don't have any of those feelings anymore. And the other thing that lots of you will know about me is that I've, in that period of time, I've transitioned to being a wheelchair user full-time. And that's been incredibly difficult. But to be honest, I can't really separate it out from my faith journey. They seem incredibly linked to me. It's like God has gifted me the wheelchair as a way of learning to occupy my own space and deserving it. And he's given it to me to be a space with Jesus. So that's why I'm being baptized today, because I feel ready.
And now John is going to speak to us. Don't fall in the water prematurely, John.
Feel very vulnerable here, I must admit. Thank you to every one of you in advance for listening to what I have to say here, my testimony. And I just would like to begin by thanking Jenny. It's been an honour to share this process, this path towards baptism with you, Jenny. And it's such a lovely thing that not only have I been prepared for this baptism today, but I've made a new friend as well. So thank you. Much of what Matt has said, and indeed what Phil has said today, I feel there are echoes in what I'd like to say this morning. I come from, really, I think I would describe it as an atheist background. My parents were... Sounds a contradiction. My parents were Christian, I think, in their moral direction. They brought up their children, I think, in a Christian way. My mum was probably the nicest person you could ever want to meet. But I can remember my mum saying it was a family meal, and we were talking about religion. Just so happens that was the subject of the day. And I can remember her saying, and it stuck with me, I was quite young at the time, "I'm sorry," she said, "I cannot believe in a good, all-powerful God that allows the sort of suffering that we witnessed in the Second World War. How can someone as evil as Hitler be allowed to do what he did if God exists?" Well, that's a good question. I think probably I've always been a Christian in the sense of that background, my parents' upbringing, the Christian way, which I feel that they believed was the right way, their sense of right and wrong, their sense of honesty and pushing that honesty onto myself, my and my brothers, helping people less fortunate than yourselves, their love that surrounded us very much as a family. So I suppose that leads on to the question, why did I not become a Christian until about 4 years ago? Or become a Christian in the sense of me saying that I am a Christian? I think partly I describe myself as a lazy Christian, to be honest. I had a full-time job. I was a teacher. I had a busy social life. I was very sporty. Why would I want to spend time, social time, precious social time, or time when I could be watching Spurs play, trying to prove or research the existence of God or the truth of the Jesus' resurrection? So I was lazy. I think even more than that, I think I was scared. I was scared of researching. I was scared of looking into it. I felt that, and I think Matt said something along these lines a few minutes ago, I felt that my life was private. My life, my fate is what I make it. I'm responsible for me. I couldn't really entertain the idea of me not being in control of my life. My family is my life. That's all that's important. And surely it would be a kind of weakness to think otherwise. So what changed? Well, you know, and what led me to standing here? And as Jenny said, I can hardly believe it really is, you know, I'm actually standing here talking to you, and that this is something I'm prepared to do and very happy to do. What changed? I think I started to find it hard to reconcile the feeling of God's presence when, for example, I was listening to a favourite Requiem, or maybe listening to the angelic voices at Evensong at Chichester Cathedral. When you hear those voices, to reconcile that with also believing that there's nothing there. There's nothing more to it than just a voice. We hopefully will hear one of those angelic voices when we listen to the Pia Jesu of Fauré's Requiem a little later. Pia Jesu, merciful Jesus. What else? What else led me to think things through a bit more? Well, there's an awful lot of very intelligent people who are believers. They follow Jesus. Can they all be wrong? Is the story of the resurrection a lie, a fiction? Is there any other explanation for the fact that we date everything about the world from the birth of Jesus? It's now 2023 AD, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord. I think as I got older as well, I began to realise that actually I'm not in control. I'm not in control. Things happen to me in the world which we can't control. Which takes me back to my mum's words, really. If God's in control, why do bad things happen? Why doesn't he make all things nice? Is it a test of some sort? Well, of course, that's a question that many of us Christians ask. But I think maybe it's an indication that I'm beginning to think with a Christian mind about some of these very difficult concepts. What else changed? I joined Maybridge Community Church. That was a big influence on me becoming a Christian. I found a wide-ranging care for other people, people in the church, people in the community, and that affected me pretty deeply. Sue and I would often travel home after a Sunday service and engage in quite lengthy discussions about whatever had been said at the service that day. And I don't think I'd ever done it in quite the same way before. And then one day it sort of just happened. It was a service at Oscar Romeo School. An opportunity was given for the congregation to have a few minutes quiet. Piero and Natalie were playing some music quietly. And I found myself with my eyes closed. I was thinking deeply about I'm not sure what, about Jesus, about what was being had been said that day in the sermon. I'm not sure. But there, in front of me, was a door. And the door opened, and I moved towards it, and I went through it. And I don't think I've really looked back since that day. I was profoundly affected by that experience. It added to the feelings that I've already explained. And it led me to the point where I am today, being baptized and being part, a willingness to be part of that Spirit, that Holy Spirit that has with it such goodness and honesty and love. So I think hopefully I've been slightly less of a lazy Christian recently. I've tried to learn, I've tried to research, I've tried to listen. I've thought about the behaviour of the disciples after the resurrection, how they travelled the world and died for their beliefs in the resurrection of Jesus. The historical evidence. I think, obviously, at the moment, I'm still learning, still very much learning. I'm still gathering understanding, but I am sure of a few things, I feel. Firstly, there's something deeper in a glorious piece of singing from a boy chorister than just chance. There's something deeper and more glorious in a beautiful, warm, sunny day with maybe trees in full bloom than just chance. Secondly, I don't think anymore I can accept that we're just born and we go through these things and then we die and that's it, no more than that. And also, I'm very sure that the love and the care that I found in the Christian faith, well, if everyone had that, you and I, world leaders, well, what a world it would be, eh? And that's why I'm being baptized today, and I thank you so much for listening.
Close friends and family, if you'd like to join them over there, otherwise they're going to feel very, very alone. That's great. And while they do that,